Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat. I am your host, Christopher Hart. Nope, that is the third week in a row I screwed that up. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I'm your host, Christopher Hart. This week was fun. So let's talk about this week. First of all, I had a fantastic time last week with Travis Whitmire and Rasul from Buffalo Bayou. And if you've noticed, I haven't said Rasul's full name because I feel like I'm butchering it every time, but it's Zarinfar, and it feels like I'm butchering his name, but apparently that's how you pronounce it. Rasul's a great guy, and I loved that he just kind of talked, right? He just ran with it. I've always been fascinated with him. He's an interesting character, great guy. And him and Travis did the opposite. Travis didn't say two words, and Travis is I've hung out with Travis a lot. I know Travis really well. I know more about Travis than he thinks I know about Travis. And he was so quiet and reserved, and I love that about him. Not that I loved it about him. I love Travis who's Travis, but I was surprised to see that he didn't have much to say. We're going to get him back on, and I'm going to get him greased, so to speak, before he comes on. Make sure I cover a few things here. First, the Whiskey Social. We've been pushing the last couple of weeks, mostly because we got hit with a few great things. A tasting of 40-plus-year-old single malts. Just quite a few things happening that has made the – we've also added like 10 new brands that have never been to the event before. So the event is growing substantially. And last we talked, we were at just over 75% capacity or something. And since that episode aired, we have seen quite a bit of traffic. So definitely go to HoustonWhiskeySocial.com, check out the event. We're going to be adding the Texas Whiskey Association to the event. That's not confirmed yet. I probably shouldn't say it, but who gives a crap? Who gives a crap? They're coming. We're going to do something with the Texas Whiskey Association so you can really get an at-home, down-to-earth perspective on Texas whiskey, because it is doing really good things, including Lone Elm, which I've been pushing them like crazy because I had Lone Elm's wheat whiskey the other day and I was blown away by it. So Lone Elm's cash strength single barrel whiskey, very, very happy with it. I'm ranting a bit. So today was an interesting episode. We had on an upstart. What do you mean an upstart? Well, an upstart, traditionally speaking, that when a new distillery opens, they get off the ground with what they got, right? It's kind of like when a jet clears the runway, they get off the ground as soon as they can. And these guys have taken a different perspective on it. So today we're joined with Zachary Hiller and Brian Clary of William Price Distilling. Well, what's William Price? I've never heard of it. That's because they're not open yet. These guys started couple years ago raising money for a distillery, and instead of struggling like most small brands do, they're grinding towards having the freedom and the financial backing from the beginning so that they can immediately release something that's inexpensive. And it's an interesting take on opening a distillery in Texas, and very good guys. So today we are joined by William Price Distilling. Please rate and review the show. Check us out on iTunes, Google Play, the whole nine yards, including mywhiskeyneat.com, where you can find shirts and glassware. These beautiful, beautiful glasses, my favorite glasses in the world. We use Luigi Bormioli Vinotech glasses. The cheapest you can get them in the U.S. is on my website. I think that pretty much covers it. Yeah. Sweet. This week's episode is brought to you by Highland Park 18. Highland Park is a I've been a longtime supporter of Elise, the local rep. The brand is supporting the show, and huge fan of Highland Park. You guys know my story about my wife and our engagement bottle, and this 18 is hands down the best thing I've ever had from them, and it is a very special bottling as well, simply because it's amazing. I think that pretty much covers it. Without further, nope, not going to do it. Not going to do it. See what happens. I have a PR guy, a marketing guy I talked to for the event, which sounds super gross. I apologize for even saying those words to you. And he was like, hey, man, you have to stop saying those words. So I'm learning. I'm learning to stop saying stop saying without further ado, and to stop saying that I could not be a bigger fan. I'm working on it. But I appreciate you guys either way. So I don't know what to say besides without further ado. Cheers. I know you're a lawyer.
Yeah. I'm doing this.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure what else.
I came from the consulting world, but I'm doing this now.
This is exciting. I'm really excited for you guys. I just got off the phone with, and I'll say this on, oh, we're on air, right? Yeah, yeah. So I just got off the phone with Spencer Whelan with Texas Whiskey Association.
Yeah.
We talked about this whole controversy centered around the Wizarding Academy and the sommelier title thing. I don't know if you saw the second edition article that came out yesterday.
No, not yesterday.
So there was this initial story that broke about how, and I remember their names. It's Rex and Daniel. The two guys that run the Whiskey Tribe, I believe is out of Austin. Listen, if you're not in Houston, you're in Austin, Dallas, and those are the same city to me as far as I'm concerned. they both suck. No, I'm just kidding. They run a Whiskey Wizarding Academy is what they call it, and it's this whole – they also own a distillery up there that they crowdsourced called Crowded Barrel. They're also founding members of the Texas Whiskey Association, and they are under some recent controversy for the term whiskey sommelier. And this article was written about them, putting them on blast, which was pretty – there's definitely a narrative there. It had some fair points, more than fair points. Most of it I think was actually a reasonable thing to take issue with. My problem is that whenever you do an expose, and the guy who wrote the article admits that he doesn't do this for a living and that this is really just a passion of his. But when you do an expose on something, you have to, in my opinion, you really should present something in a series of facts and let people derive their own opinion of it. Whereas the narrative of the entire piece is definitely to tear down this whole thing. And so then they make some assumptions in the article about the intentions behind the name sommelier and blah, blah, blah. Whereas a lot of people feel like they're – not a lot of people. That's a narrative I'm not trying to put on them. But there are some people who are taking issue with the term sommelier, where it has a long historic meaning behind it to become a sommelier. And they think that they're playing off the name sommelier. And I – like as a way to manipulate and ask for X amount of dollars, thousands of dollars for a two-day course or three-day course – I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think like most things in life, it's derivative of, right? So if you wanted to start an educational course around whiskey, what would you call it? I mean, sommelier is the natural – my favorite sure. – and I know people are going to take some criticism, but there's a guy on YouTube. Look up Martin Risa. Martin Risa runs the Water Sommelier Program. I said that right. Water Sommelier Program at Patina in California. Not all water is created equal. It's not as illegitimate as you would think. It's actually very legitimate. The whole concept of what's good water, what's bad water, mostly because in America, our concept of what is good water to drink is super jacked. We love distilled water. We think distilled is pure, but there's no minerals in it. It's not good for hydration. And so I'm a big fan of the water somm, is what they call them. But the term sommelier simply is derivative of what has already been put in place. I don't think it's necessarily a capitalization on the term for financial reasons. I think what happens is we want to assume the worst in people whereas I think we should just present it as here are the facts. This mm-hmm. is what's happening. And then say, look, I don't – their issues is that it's not accredited. The Whiskey Sommelier program is not accredited by any credible source or anyone else. Or blah, blah, blah. That's fair. I can't disagree with you there. But
well, it would be a credible source though.
Well, and you the know, problem is there isn't – that's how those things start, right? So typically what happens is when any organization starts, you're the first.
Yep.
And it's built around that.
Yep.
I get it. But at the same time, until you get that traction behind you, you're open to criticism. So, yeah.
Well, even after they do get everyone behind them, they're still going to be open to criticism.
Sure. You know,
it's like just
– Oh, yeah, all the time.
You got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So.
We did the Devil's River interview, yeah. And we – I you know, in my mind, I thought, what's the best way to approach this that I'm not going to catch the most crap for? and I thought, well, I'll give him all the questions. Let him study. Let him prepare an answer.
Yeah.
And if it's a bullshit answer, people are going to call him on it. And if it's not, then I just realized I cussed early. Sorry. 4 minutes, 52 seconds in. if it's endearing and honest, it'll come across endearing mm-hmm. and honest. And for the most part, nobody had real issues with the interview. But still, there are those who are going to latch on to
haters going to hate.
Haters yeah. going to hate, man. They hate us because they ain't us.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was talking to Spencer Whelan, and I mentioned you guys, and I said there's this new distillery that's been grinding for quite some time. You guys have been a startup for, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like 2 years?
About 2 years.
Yeah, about.
You guys are 2 years. So typically what happens, first of all, before we get into this, let's have a pour or something.
Yeah.
So I brought a few things today. I had lunch with the owner and founder of Oak and Eden the other day.
Okay.
Now, I will tell you this. Before we get into Oak and Eden, and before we get too deep into it, I want to say this. So Oak and Eden is a new brand out of Texas where they have proprietized – proprietaryized the idea of putting a toasted oak spiral in the bottle with the liquid. And nowadays we live in a
– do they have a patent on that or yep. is it a trade secret?
They have a patent on okay. it. And we'll even have
looking that up later.
They even have a patent as to how the spiral looks in the bottle leaned against the thing. Don't ask me how that works.
You should call me for the next one.
Yeah. So anytime you do anything kind of remotely gimmicky – especially nowadays,
mm-hmm.
there's automatically hesitation from the whiskey nerd, right? The,
yeah.
the guy that has 500, 600 bottles at his house. That being said, I am looking forward to trying this. I had their bourbon and their finished bourbon, and I had no complaints. It's about 2 years old. Enjoyed them. But the thing is that it's not actually bourbon. The moment you put that oak spiral in there.
So it's in the bottle.
It's in the bottle.
I didn't see that before.
Yeah, the moment you put that oak spiral in there, this now becomes a whiskey specialty.
Okay.
This is not technically bourbon anymore.
Yeah, I just didn't realize it was in the bottle.
Yeah. So I was pleasantly surprised with the two bottles I tried before. I've not tried the rye. This could be complete garbage. I have no idea. I will tell you, I had a fascinating conversation with the man. And instantly latched on to I love conversation centered around religion
mm-hmm.
and Oak and Eden, if yep. that's not a hint at anything yep. religious, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know what is. But they we had a great discussion. Again, I have no idea what this tastes like. So we had a great discussion around – so he's religious, but not like dogmatic and in your face about it or anything like that. But his whole idea, which I actually support fully, teetotalism really started in America in the early 1900s, late 1800s, yep. where we pushed for, from a religious perspective, we pushed for no drinking at all.
Yep.
And he doesn't believe that drinking is inherently bad. And I loved the conversation. It's something that I remember as a kid. I grew up in a Pentecostal church, and I remember my pastor telling me one day that drinking doesn't taste good. People drink, when you drink, it's drinking for a purpose. And I remember at 17 thinking that's got to be bullcrap. And And I have determined as an adult that that's bullcrap.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had a complete opposite experience growing up, and I'm Jewish. Everything we do, you know, we go bless that wine, and let's
sure. Yeah, know, Catholics did it too. Yeah. I've always been fascinated with the religious discussion around alcohol and the habits, because there are super super religious or sections of religion that fully support alcohol, like you said, Judaism and Catholicism, and but the Christian in America, I might as well taste it real quick. Yeah, right. Is very much against it. That's young rye.
Yep. If you look at other cultures, like in Japanese culture, they didn't go through that anti-drinking period. So drinking is a part of life.
Yeah,
I mean, part of work is going out and drinking for hours after you're out of the office.
Yeah, and so we had lunch at Whiskey Cake. A great conversation. I have a profound respect for the guy. This is sourced young rye. It definitely tastes like sourced young rye, but it's in a $30 price range, $35 price range. And the spiral aside, I have no complaints with this. This isn't jarring at all. A lot of times you get this jarring $60 price for swill. I think it's priced appropriately for young rye, and I'm.
Now, do they say have they figured out a perfect time?
I forgot that sound I make. Sorry.
Have they figured out that perfect time of how long in the bottle that?
Yeah. So I know what you're going to ask. You're going to say, I had the same thought when I first met him at TDSA, Texas Distilled Spirits Association event. And I said, well, what happens if this sits on the shelf for a year? Is that spiral going to ruin the liquid? And he said, no. The spirals are specifically tapped out, exhausted, so to speak, I believe within 60 days or 30 days or something like that. So I forget the exact time frame, but it was thought of.
Okay.
That's part of the calculation.
You put a toasted spiral in there. It's like a tea bag. It'll eventually run out.
Yep.
That's exactly so, what I was thinking about.
I thought it was – listen, I walked away feeling like I made a new friend.
Yeah.
So – I was fascinated by it. That being said, where were we? What were we talking about before?
Our grind.
Oh, your grind. You guys have been doing this for 2 years now.
Yeah, it takes a while to get started.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it is just trying to make sure that we have everything put together before we start.
You know, because that's the thing about that. Let's talk about that. Once you start, you have to find a way to stay afloat.
Yeah.
So if you wait to start until you're ready to start, 2 years of your life and you guys aren't making juice yet. So, yep. And I know this will be covered in the introduction, but, we'll say it again here. William Price Distilling.
Yes.
Right. So, my guests today, Zach and Brian, are planning on opening a distillery in the great city of Houston, Texas. William Price Distilling. The goal, though, is to not typically in Texas, and we said this before the show started, typically what happens in the U.S., a distillery usually gets up off the ground with a minimum. They're ready to go, and they're often in a business park with not a lot of room, and they put a lot of time and money in the building of a distillery, and then, of course, maintaining it, because we've talked about this before. You distill, and you have to wait 2 years, right? And kind of monitor along the way to make sure that it's even worth your time, because after 2 years, if it's garbage, you got to start from scratch. Mm-hmm. And what you guys have done is you don't want to do that.
Nope.
You don't want to start with the bare minimum.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the laws have kind of changed to really kind of help what we're trying to do. I think in the past when people have opened up before, you could drink on prem, like in the distillery, and actually sell on site. You know, having some small industrial park, you know, in the middle of nowhere was advantageous because it was cheap rent, right? But now that you can actually have people come in, you know, that's part of our goal, is going to be able to be accessible, have people come in. You know, that tasting room on site is, you know, our first chance to watch people drink what we're making and what we're selling, and have immediate feedback and kind of work off of that. And so in order to do that, we just wanted to make sure that we had a space that was big enough both to start and to grow into and do all the stuff that we wanted to do all at the same time.
From the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what is the bottom dollar, big picture number that you guys are aiming for before you even begin?
$2 million.
That is a exorbitantly high number, which that, it's good. I'm not criticizing it. What I'm saying is that you guys are really, really are waiting.
Yeah, we've really thought about it and talked to a lot of people, done our research, been to 50 to 75 different distilleries, talked to them. And hey, how did you get started? What's the best midpoint that we need to be at? And we're not rich guys. We're not Sagamore Spirits. We're coming in with a $15 million bankroll to do this.
Is that how they started?
That's how they started.
$15 million.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you know Sagamore Spirits, their owner is the owner of Under Armour.
Oh, yeah.
So this Sagamore Spirits for him is a fun thing to do.
Sure.
For us, it's going to be our life's work, our goal, and what we plan to hand off to our kids in the future. So
we I had this discussion with Rasul from Buffalo Bayou Brewing, which that episode hasn't aired yet. Had that discussion over passion versus financial goals and starting a business. $2 million before you even begin is a admirable, lofty goal before beginning. I don't work in that side of the industry, so I don't know. There are people who I know own distilleries who are going to be watching this. What percentage are you away from completing that goal?
We're about 7 to 8% away from completing that.
7 to 8%. So what's the goal? You guys have been in HBS and in Houston for quite some time. What's your idea core product before it's released? Are we talking sourcing whiskey? Are we talking a gin or a vodka? Are we?
You're talking about from day one when we open up what we're going to have?
From day one, and in another segment, we'll ask what your ultimate goal is before you release your own grain of glass.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, it'd be no surprise to you that, yeah, we're going to source. We've been talking to a number of people, both in Texas and out, just trying to make all the numbers work and find stuff that we like. And I think we found some people that we're going to move forward with once we're ready to do that. And even a lot of those people are going to start making with our recipe potentially before we start and then buy it from them later, hopefully.
Sure. Contract is
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you've got to, you know, once we put our juice in our barrels in our house, it's going to take time to get them out. And raising that kind of money, I've got to go pay people back. So.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean that's the whole issue with the idea. I'll never forget who told me this. Frank Krockenberger from Maker's Mark. Me and him had a discussion one day at lunch, and he had said the fascinating thing about what we do is that you can open a brewery, build a brand, and close the brewery. And fail before you could even open a distillery.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. And I forget who I had in here. The whole idea, I think it may have been Avanac, but we were talking about with a brewery, you know, you could tell pretty quick if your beer's bad.
Yeah.
And with bourbon, it takes time.
Yeah.
It takes contact with wood before you realize this was a big mistake. And you've got investors to pay back. And so you've got to decide, do I want to do a gin? Do I want to do a vodka? What's the quickest way to make some money until we're ready to fund the goal?
So for us, I think we talked about that at length with many people, many smart people, many smarter people than us. And I think what we came up with is
many smarter people than I.
Than I'm just kidding. Smarter people than I. English is not my strong suit at times. But the idea is to not put all your eggs in one basket.
Sure.
If I decide to go out there and make bourbon and want to sit on it for 4 to 6 years, who knows how good it is going to be in 4 to 6 years, right?
Sure.
So you try and get rid of your risk as much as possible, which means
in the interim.
So you make a vodka, you make a gin that provides some income. You source some whiskey from people who've made it for 100 plus years. They know what they're doing.
Sure.
You hire whiskey consultants to come in and be master blenders for you. I jokingly say that I'm not in it to be the production person. I'm not in it to be the creative person. You don't want me doing your final tasting of whiskey and blending because, you know, sometimes if I get a little too drunk, I want to go get Taco Bell at, you know, two in the morning.
Sure.
That doesn't always mean the best bourbon.
Yeah.
So you stand on the shoulders of giants.
Right.
You hire people who are
smart. So you're passionate about it. You love it. But you acknowledge the fact that you're not going to be the thing to shape the taste because you don't trust yourself.
I don't trust myself in the creative side. And the more people in the room who are smart at doing that, the better.
Sure.
We would love to eventually be there to where we could do that ourselves or have someone on staff who does that. And that's the goal, is to have someone on staff who does our creative side.
Right.
Until we get to that point, until we can finance that, we're going to use outside consultants to do
sure.
it. We're going
to. You guys talk to Nancy Fraley?
We have talked to Nancy Fraley. She was too busy with 50 to 60 brands to do it herself. In fact, this bottle comes from Nancy Fraley.
Yeah. I'm such an avid admirer of hers for so many reasons. I really want to get her in here.
But we talked to her. She said, I'm a little too busy, but these are the people you should use. These are the people I would use if I wasn't doing it.
Sure.
So those are the people we're using. We have a master distiller doing our design and our equipment design. And he has, was it 56? 56 years of distilling experience.
Is this a name that I know?
Michael Delavante?
No, it's not.
Yeah. So he actually comes from the rum world. So Appleton Rum is putting out a 50-year-old rum. And he said, don't buy it. They didn't pay the guy that much who made it because I made it 50 years ago.
Sure.
I was living on site getting paid nothing.
Yeah.
It's not good rum.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, after 50 years, he's like, nope.
Yeah.
So those are the people that we want to bring in and hire on and do the creative side for us.
Sure.
So having those people putting all our eggs in different baskets, spreading around the wealth to make sure that at least one thing will hit. And doing that all in timing with having them source our raw ingredients, do the product development as well. The people with the innate knowledge are the ones that we want doing our creative.
Right.
I could be a Travis Whitmire out there.
Sure.
And take 5 years before I start to learn it. And another 5 years doing it and bootstrapping.
But I've already taken two to raise money.
Yeah.
So sure, I'm ready to get going. Sure. And let me clarify something I said earlier. There's nothing wrong with those who start from the grind early before they have all the capital. I mean, what brands like Yellow Rose and what Travis Whitmire have done has built from the freaking first brick off the ground. And I have nothing but respect for those guys.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But it is a grind.
Yeah.
So I like the idea. If you guys getting to that point before, and if you've got the luxury of doing it, then do it. You know, wait till you get to that point. I love that we had you two and I had lunch like a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And y'all told me a year and a half ago the mark was 2 million.
Yeah.
And the fact that you guys have set this. And you guys handed me a pamphlet of like, did I sign a non-disclosure? I don't think
probably
I,
not.
Okay, you guys handed me a business model that was the most. Dude, when I was wanting to start a whiskey festival, I was like, I'm going to start a whiskey festival. you guys handed me a business plan that was like 20,000 slides.
But there's a reason that we have that. So you know, once upon a time. I guess Brian had left the oil and gas world and was went back to school. Yeah.
Let me do this Magnus.
Great.
Yes. I haven't had cigar blend in a while.
Went back to school, to business school. And I, you know, had been thinking about maybe doing a distillery just kind of in the back of my head. Wasn't really a thing at the time.
Sure.
And so I said to him, and we've been friends forever. We were college roommates, played rugby together, all that fun stuff. And so I said to Brian, if you ever have to write a business plan, find out what it would take to start a distillery. And he goes, where? I said, I don't care where. I just want to know, you know, pick a town, wherever business school is, start writing a business plan and let's see what it'll take.
Wait, so you guys weren't in Houston at the time?
So he was in Arizona. I moved back here for law school and, I mean, I was probably a year or two out of law school at that time, maybe.
Yeah.
And so that was.
And you were in Arizona for what?
for graduate school. So I was getting my MBA, my business.
I mean, and that was degree. That was probably 8 years ago now.
About that, yeah.
So you both ended up back in Houston.
Yeah, so you know, so after grad school, he had like an outline of a business plan, but wasn't what you ended up seeing. He went into consulting, you know, loved it until he didn't, and you know, it's like I love my legal practice, but this is also really fun.
Yeah.
So you know, we kind of sat down. I think I actually brought you down to help me cook in the rodeo cook-off 1 year.
Yeah, because you've got your hands in a little bit of everything.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Renaissance rodeo. Man, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's something that I've always said I would do if I ever got to the point where I was able to. I've always said two things if I had money, right? I would have 12 kids. I wouldn't stop. We'd have a new kid every year. And, you know, as long as my wife would put up with me, kids are amazing. But the other thing is there's so many things that I would dip my toes in, psychology, therapy, brewing, winemaking. I would inundate. My wife would hate me. I keep my mind super sharp.
You know, having a wife, I have slowly pulled back from some of these things. Love you, Donna. Happy birthday.
Today's her birthday?
It is her birthday today.
Nice. And you came here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's still at work, you know. Yeah, so you know, I got him to come down to the rodeo, and I think we're just watching the pits overnight, and it was, you know, that day we're like, okay, whatever it takes, let's find out what it actually will take to do this, and let's get it going. And so that was kind of the beginning there, and then it has slowly blossomed over time, and you know, even the deck that you saw then was, you know, nowhere near from the first version. It's probably like version 20 something or another.
Version,
you know?
29 right now.
So it has slowed down since then, because we had the vision by then. But you know, it's we have been grinding, just in a different way than other people do.
Sure.
So
sourcing first. That's the goal. Bourbon?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think ultimately, you know, the stuff that we're going to source, I think we had kind of talked about it, trying to mirror as closely what our final products would be.
Staying on brand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But you know, the stuff that is sourcing, I mean, it can be so different, and it's all about how you blend it together and which barrels you actually get. So to say that the flavor profile of that first source thing that we put out will be the same as what comes out of our barrels in a couple of years, who knows? But you know, I think in the long term, we'd like to do a little bit of everything. But to start, we'll source the things that we like and that our people like.
Do you mind sharing which brokers you've talked to yet?
I don't think so yet.
Okay. All right.
If only because we're not, you know, we're not under contract. We haven't really signed anything. Sure. I don't know if they would appreciate us telling them yet. Because I imagine there'll be some legal paperwork forthcoming.
Sure.
We do have a separate broker for rum as well. So we're looking to source rums out of the islands as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. From where?
Out of the islands.
Oh, from out of the islands.
Yeah. Yeah. So that broker definitely does not want us to reveal trade secrets, but we don't even know from what distilleries. We just know from what country.
Early on in this show's development, I was always caught up trying to figure out what the opposite of a red flag was. I would always say that. What's the opposite of a red flag? Right. But it didn't have the same ring to it, right? So
maybe a green light?
Well, right. And so I kept trying to find a way to signify that I'm hearing a lot of great things, right? As an enthusiast, there's some things you want to avoid. There's some things that'll automatically cause you to lose credibility. When you are hearing a brand say certain things, you automatically are going to go, ugh, or hmm, right? So, and I figured it out. Boxes to check, right? There's just a couple of boxes that I'm looking for that are not red flags. And the fact that you're doing a rum, what do y'all's let's narrow this down. Let's tighten this goal here. So, okay. So if we're going to be sourcing at the beginning, what are we sourcing? Are we talking 80 proof flavored this, or what's the goal?
So one quick, easy off low hanging fruit is a nice rum from the islands.
Okay. What's a nice rum?
Something that's tasty. That's, I mean, we're looking around, you know, an 86, 90 proof.
Okay.
Probably aged and master blended. You know, a nice plantation style kind of realm of four okay. square.
So with dosage, it would be a goal. Maybe sugar added. Is that what you're saying?
No, not always. No.
But you're open to it?
Or we're open to it. Okay. We're looking across the spectrum to make sure we find what's within our palate as well as what's the most transparent.
Sure. Okay. So transparency is important to you.
Transparency is extremely important.
So you're saying that you're okay with, your focus is taste as long as it's transparent.
Our focus is taste as long as it's transparent, but more important than taste to us is experience.
Okay.
So when you sit down and you experience a product, you know, sometimes you can go drink a PBR at a dive bar. That's a great experience. Does that mean that PBR is a great beer? But, or you can sit there and you can have, okay. I think I heard Dave Pickerell come on and he said, he liked some really good bottles and it was all about sharing them with friends.
Okay. So let me give you a little pushback.
Okay.
Okay. Let me hold your feet to the fire a little bit. What you just said is basically that more important than taste is experience. And let me clarify. Okay. The lawyer in you is just bending over backwards.
Yeah.
So more what's more important to taste is experience. That's what you just said. The problem is that as a producer, you can't control the experience. So if you put out a shitty product and hope that it's experienced in the best positive way, you see the concern there.
So I think a little bit of misspeak. And so I think obviously you need a good product. I think, I think nowadays a good product is a prerequisite to being successful.
Very true.
Agreed.
Right. And
agreed.
So if you don't have the good product, who cares what the experience is?
Right.
Is what I would add to that. But I think by the experience that Brian is really kind of talking about is really what we're looking for at the beginning is going to be getting people to come to the distillery and experience it with us there. Obviously, you know, there's going to be some distribution and what people do at home with that bottle. Sure, you can't control that.
Right.
But having people come in, be comfortable, share a glass with us, tell us what they think about it right away, you know, having some sort of whiskey education, you know, in the distillery, you know, something like that where we can really connect with the consumer and them actually be part of the family and experience it with us is really, I think, what Brian was trying to say
there. Yeah, I was really trying to get to that as the seed that gets
too late. No take backs.
But, you know, tours, blending classes.
Right.
What Iron Root did with the distilling
kit. Oh, dude, Iron Root. Listen, man. And I know they listen to the show, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up your butts, but the distilling camp, you went to that, right? You went to the first one.
Oh, did
you go to that one?
Nah, I couldn't go.
You missed it, right? Yeah. Or did you originally sign up for it and you couldn't make it?
I was going to. I can't remember why I couldn't make it, but
I'm still planning on going this year, but there's a chance I might not be able
to make it. Unfortunately, I can't go this year either. But that's what I'm talking about.
Experience. Their grassroots campaign has been everyone is talking about, speaking of not being able to control that final experience, they have done a good job of really bringing people in the most down-to-earth, honest-to-God, family way possible. And I'm such a freaking fan of Iron Root.
Me too. I'm a big admirer of what they've done along the whole way. I've bent their ear to find out, you know, more information of how they got things done. And their experience is not 100% what we're trying to replicate. But
it'd be hard to mirror.
Yeah. But what your feelings are with them is something we're trying to replicate. And with those feelings, we'd like to do that through great products, through great transparency.
Right.
If you source something from Kentucky, it's going to say Kentucky on the front of the label. It's not going to say it on the back.
Ooh.
You're not going to see Texas Kentucky whiskey. You
know? You're going to see a flag of Texas in an outline of the state of Kentucky, something like that.
Yeah.
Clear marketing, clear.
That's a standard that so the minimum requirement for those who don't know, the minimum requirement for out-of-state distillation is that it needs to be on the back of the label, right? along with so steady distillation is required at minimum on the back of the label. The fact that you're, I'm going to hold you to that.
I'll put it on the front.
Put it on the front. I agree with you because I don't think anyone cares anymore. I think the biggest thing that people care about nowadays, even the nerdiest of nerds or the snobbiest of snobs, is transparency. And I think you're, if it's a good product and you're transparent, I mean, Plantation is killing it right now in Texas. They're the most transparent, mm-hmm. but also the most sourciest of sources of sourced mm-hmm. rum. And no one gives a crap. Well, one guy gives a crap, and he's making great rum in Barbados. But the consumer is happy, mm-hmm. and I think the fact that is a box that's been checked from the very beginning with you, I think is a very promising sign.
Yeah,
and my hat's off to you for that. So rum to start with. Putting out a bourbon as well.
We'll put out a source bourbon.
We're talking young?
Old? I think it kind of depends on the prices when we're ready to pull the trigger and what is actually available. I mean, those inventories change very rapidly.
Sure.
So to say what I would buy now when we actually have the money and the permit and are able to open, they're going to be different things.
Sure.
So
I would say the goal would be something around a 4-year-old Kentucky bourbon as a minimum standard.
Basically. And what's the price point you guys are shooting for?
We're really trying to shoot for a price point of around 40 to 45.
So sub $50.
Yeah. Yeah.
That base
product. And I remember this discussion at lunch with you guys almost 2 years ago. The number keeps growing. 4.5 years ago, we had lunch and you guys told me that you wanted to hit all the initial reservations with sourced whiskeys or with bourbon period out of Texas. You wanted to hit above a certain age before it was released, below a certain dollar after it was released. Cause the biggest complaint that Texas has is the inherently higher price for a younger product. And you've got phenomenal brands like Balcones, and I'm going to give, there's two things I want to say about Balcones real quick. First thing about Balcones is the first distillery that I know of in Texas that has just lowered prices. And yes, there's an inherently higher price when you're a Texas distillery and you're a startup and you're young. And you have to make a better margin, right? You've got you're struggling fighting the big guys.
That's what the sourcing is for,
right?
Right.
But Balcones is the first distillery I know of in Texas that once they doubled distillation and then doubled it again, they were like, we can afford to drop the price on our baby blue, and it went from $43 to $32 a bottle or something, and that is such a not a necessary gesture, but a very, very respectable and endearing gesture that you're willing to say, okay, look, we were only charging this much because we needed to, and now we don't need to. Anyways, my point is that the other thing I won't say, I'll take it back. I'm not going to say it, but the other thing was about the feud between Chip Tate I'll say it. Forget it. I don't give a crap. We have two segments to fill. For those of you who are listening, and this is really my plea for reasonability, and I love to beg for reasonability from people. There was a feud, for those who do know, there was a feud between Chip Tate and Balcones where he was essentially the founder of the company and was eventually ousted. From a consumer side, when you hear the story that a founder was ousted, you think, oh, man, that guy got ripped off. He got screwed. I'm mad. I'm never going to buy this brand it's again.
It's the default reaction.
It's the default reaction.
Yeah.
I have since, a long time ago, I found out some things about all that. Now, when it first happened, I never took a stance. It's none of my business. Who, I mean, when that whole thing happens, people want to fight for the little guy. They want to defend that person. I have nothing but positive thoughts about Chip. I have no feelings either way. However, there's more to the story than just – there's always more to the story than what just is there and what's advertised. And there were reasons things happened. And no matter what those reasons are, good or bad, as a consumer, you're not going to get the full story from a news article. So just stay out of it. Support, if you like the brand, support the brand. I'm a huge Jared Hempstead fan. Jared has been at the company since the beginning. He's their distiller now. He is the most down-to-earth, nicest, kind of quiet. If you've ever talked to him, he's such a he's introverted. He's not extroverted, and I'm very extroverted. I love the guy, and it's just just stay out of it. that's what I'm getting at. What I'm getting at is we live in this era. We've kind of gotten a little political on the show recently about left and right and how things get exposed and like this whole MAGA hat kid thing. And within 24 hours, everybody was mad and then everyone's defending and then everyone's mad again. And it's like, just don't worry about it. At the very minimum, this kid that was involved in this whole thing was just an a-hole 16-year-old. At the minimum.
You mean a 16-year-old?
Yeah. Like, just listen. And this is me being philosophical on the show that has nothing to do with you guys, but
just letting you go.
It's so much easier to just love people. Yeah. If I'm out in public and I see something happening that I'm against, I voice my against, right? That's wrong. Stop it, sir. If you see something in the news, there's no way that's the whole thing. And we're in such a rush to get mad. I saw a meme recently that said, when you're looking for a yellow car, you can see yellow cars, right? You'll notice them everywhere. If you're looking for a reason to be mad, you're going to find reasons to be mad. We live in such an era of hate. Don't focus on the hate. Just love each other. Just be nice to each other. Get together. Have drinks. It's so much easier to project love and than it is to get caught up in drama. Everyone's watching this like, what in the hell does this happen to you guys?
Everything at the same time.
I have so many thoughts I can't voice on Facebook because it spirals into vitriol and hate from my left friends and my right friends.
What you will love is our whiskey.
Yeah. Back to that. So what is the ultimate goal of what do y'all want to put out, your first grain to glass product? What are your minimum standards that you guys are – what's the dream? I want to put out this.
So I always said that – our goal is to make a nice flagship bourbon, and we'll sell our soul to get there. We'll do
what? First of all, put that on a goddamn shirt. Say it again.
We want to put out a great bourbon, and
that's
we'll
not
sell.
That's not what you said.
Flagship bourbon. Put out a flagship bourbon, and we'll sell our soul to get there.
Oh, it's means gorgeous.
We'll.
You know what that is? We'll that reminds source. Me right off the bat. Is that thing outside the Blanton's Bottling Hall at Buffalo Trace? Is we make great bourbon we sell great bourbon at a loss if we or what's I forget the whole phrase, but essentially it's like we make great bourbon at a profit if we can, at a loss if we must, but always great bourbon, right? The whole goal is we want to put out a good bourbon and we'll sell our soul to get there. Put that on something.
And I'd like for it to be higher proof.
Okay. What's the goal there? So your flagship bourbon, what's your ideal flagship bourbon? What are we talking about? Proof, age, what's it say on the label?
You know, I'd like to see something at least 100 proof. I think age kind of depends on how quickly we can experiment with keeping it from evaporating in Texas summers.
Have you seen my show before? We talked about this.
Yes.
I think... What size barrels are you planning on using?
53.
Okay, so you want to go full.
Yep. Yeah.
I'll say this. I have a theory in my complete ignorance because there's far smarter people out there in distillation than me. I think the secret to Texas is larger barrels. Our standard has always been nationally 53 gallons, right? Mm-hmm. We Texas whiskey started with the smaller barrels as a way to cut corners, a way to cut cost and to be feasible, not necessarily to cut corners. But there are distilleries, a lot of Texas distilleries are experimenting with full-size barrels now or larger, 60-gallon, 65. I forget how big the beast is at Iron Root. I think the secret is less surface ratio to liquid in the Texas heat means a slower aging process.
We're also both engineers by school, I guess, not sure. necessarily by trade. Although,
yeah, but
whatever.
That's like Arizona.
It's yeah, no, even... sure, right? No, well, we like the McDonald's. WashU and St. Louis for undergrad. That's where our engineering degrees are for.
Okay, what are your?
So I'd like to see it at 100 proof. I think that you know, obviously, if it's evaporating and we need to put it into a bottle, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Again, it's got to be a good product to sell. So, but I'd love to figure out a way to make it over 2 years, which I think is what most people are trying to push to now. I don't think you'd see too many, you know, high proof 2 year bourbons made grain to glass in Texas.
Sure. I mean, Whitmire's got one hell of a one.
Well, yeah. And he's leading the charge right now.
Killing it, man. Yeah, he's killing it.
I'm a huge fan. He's
this
like
great.
His shop is like half a mile from my in-laws.
Yeah.
So
well, that's a good place for it to be.
It's you know, when people come to visit on that side of the family, it's like let's go check this place out. You know, always a good time over there. But you know, if there's a way to make it to 4 years, which, you know, who knows if we can do that, but that's what I would love to see. You know, I don't know if the first barrel we empty will be that old. You know, I think that's kind of where I would like to see us settle down, at least in the short, long term.
So
if that makes
4 years, 100 proof minimum, sub price of still $50, sub 50.
So, yeah, that's what we're hoping for. And I think in order to support that, we're going to have successful sourced products to help, you know, keep us afloat.
Sure.
And so I think to maintain a that long-term edge. Sourcing, you know, product line that will help us keep the pricing down. Like you just talked about with Balcones, you know, they figured out a way to make it less expensive, and so it's less expensive. And whether that is from subsidizing or from someone else, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to charge a bunch of money for the source stuff, but, sure. You know, we've got to make a profit on that so we can make less of a profit on this.
Right. So, again, all boxes being checked. So before I get into my next question, you guys are still drinking that. I want to jump.
No, we're one ahead of you.
Yeah, we're on that.
Oh, my apologies. I want to jump into this Glen Grant. So they're not a sponsor of the show, but I'm a huge fan of Campari, and some of their obviously they make Wild Turkey. Glen Grant released a 15-year-old bat strength edition. I believe it's all ex bourbon. We'll just say it's ex-bourbon. They're 15-year-old Glen Grant bat strength single malt for $60. 15 years old, right?
Yeah.
Let me say that again. 15 goddamn years old. When it bourbon nowadays, 15 years old, you're going over $100.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that single malts are now releasing bat strength, which in this case is 100 proof, is just
fantastic.
And I've had this product. We're huge fans of it. I just wanted to push it on the show because I love it. And it was a new product last year, 2018. But I'll take the Spellmead Sherry any day.
Yeah. And I think that for us, that bourbon 100 proof, you know, 4-ish years is probably the same numbers that we told you at lunch back
it
in
is.
The day.
It is. I remember.
But, you know, I think obviously having that flagship.
That bourbon, was 8 years ago, by the way.
Yeah, 8 years ago. Right. having that flagship bourbon, I think, is important. I think I'd also like to see us making some rum at some point in-house that's also aged. And those are the two things that I like to drink the most, and that's really the reason that I want to make them.
Have you tried the Jamaican overproof I've been pushing?
Yes, I have. I do have a bottle of it. It is delicious. I thought you were going to ask if I had tried the HBS
Plantation,
which I haven't, because someone who graciously picked it up for me keeps forgetting to deliver it. And he might be sitting at this table and not have it in his backpack.
HBS Plantation, I'm a fan of as well. It's very easy drinking. So I'm a huge fan of the Jamaican funk, the muck pit dead body funk that comes with Jamaican whiskey or rum. And the HBS Plantation pick is more of a muted version of that at 101 proof or something. Big fan. Let me ask you this. You guys didn't come on the show for this, but are you guys you said you're 7% away of your goal. You guys open to investors? If people listening to this say, hey, I want to buy into this, is that you guys open to that or no?
Yeah, I think certainly we are. There will be a cap. You know, once we get that money, we'll be done. But, you know, if there are people listening, easiest way is just find us on Facebook, William Price Distilling, and send us a message. And
your page is already up?
Yeah, it's up. It's been up for a while. It doesn't have too many. We haven't been pushing it since
Nothing to push. Yeah. But you guys are committed to this. I mean, yeah, 2 years but, in and
the,
raising
the page is up. I mean, $2 million. We've been a legal entity for a while, even though we're not operating. If there's people out there with money, we're more than happy to go over
to take it.
Finer details and take it, and they can be part of the family.
So William Price Distilling Facebook page. If there is someone out there that is looking to contribute and help them reach their goal for a Texas-made grain-to-glass product and, of course, the sourced things, you can find you guys on Facebook to reach out. Is there an email address or potential that you'd like to put out there?
Yeah, if you want Zach, Z-A-C-K, at William Price Distilling, come straight to me. Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, at the same
WilliamPriceDistilling.com.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. That's exciting. I mean, I remember when we met 12 years ago that you guys had this goal. Let me ask, have you guys found a location yet?
Yes
and no.
What does that mean?
Yes, we found it. We're working on negotiating terms.
Okay. For ownership?
For lease.
For lease.
For lease.
Are we talking about a industrial park, same thing?
No,
you guys want a full thing. Is there going to be like a Copper and King situation in which you have an actual on-site large enough storage for several hundred barrels, that sort of thing?
If this place that we're looking at now works, then yes, we will be aging on-site for a good while. There's enough space.
We'll at least have about probably a year to 2 years worth of product, age product on-site. That being said, we would love to expand to another offsite facility and open up a secondary location.
Sure.
Such as, a rick house with a whiskey garden attached to it.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of brilliant. where are we talking about? You don't have to say exactly where, but are we talking Inner Loop?
Yes, Inner Loop.
What's the Eighth Wonder Brewing is like right in the heart of Edo. And
yep.
Like that's like that area.
More, even more inner than them is all I will say for now.
Okay. If this doesn't work out, may I add just my own 2 cents?
Yeah, come on. Okay.
So something happened this year that when it happened, I thought, how in the hell did this not happen until today? And that is there's going back to, we talked before, I don't know if this was on camera or not, but I'm a huge comedy fan and I'd love to get a lot of comedians in here and just have drinks with comedians and talk to them about not any comedians that like whiskey, right? Not the Houston Improv, but Warehouse Live, which has the Secret Group. It's a comedy club here in Houston. And I'm a huge fan of it. That's Houston's alt comedy scene now, that location. And Edo, East Downtown, it's been a good spot for a while. And then this year, right next door, Morgan Weber opened Vinny's Pizzeria. And I thought, how in the shit? Wait, can you say shit on camera? Or no, no. How in the hell? You say hell. How in the hell did they not open a pizza joint, a late night pizza joint next to
a comedy club?
If you go to Austin.
No, you walk outside.
If you go to 6th Street, they have a window service at past midnight of these pizza joints. Mm-hmm. You can order a slice right on the side of the street. And I thought, how did Houston not have this until Vinny's opened up? And they opened it right next door to the comedy club. And it's open to like 2 a.m. And I thought, you're going to be so freaking rich in like a year. It's so GD genius. I could say GD, right? I never. Anyways, my point is that you guys opening that place, that dream of having that grassroots and bringing people in, around other attractions in the area, whether it be a bar across the street or a pizza joint right next to that or Eighth Wonder right there, you know, depending on what you guys or where you guys are located, having reasons to come there besides you guys in that busy area, I think is pretty smart.
And one of the things that we plan on doing is being in that downtown, East Downtown, Houston Central location for a reason. You know, again, there's other distilleries that started before us that are out in the sticks, and just don't get the foot traffic.
Sure.
So if we're pushing a brand that values family and it values coming to our facility, enjoying the tour, doing a tasting, and then sitting around for a drink or two after, and getting that seed of a great feeling every time you take a sip of it, you think of that tour.
And then take a bottle home, of course.
Yeah. But the whole idea is just the foot traffic to it. And if you don't have a location that is a destination, then it's not going to come. So we want to have a destination facility.
Yeah, and obviously what I'm about to say, what isn't going to happen on day one, we're going to have to build to it. But if we were to get to a point where we had to shut down the tasting room early because we sold out of our annual allowance of proof gallons that we can sell in house, would be a good problem to have.
Yeah. Right.
And that's not possible if you don't have people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So there's this great little winery on the west side of town called Nice Winery. Guest of the show, friend of the show, Ben Songer was on the show with our friends over at McAllen. And before they moved to Pennsylvania, it's like the treacherous jerks that they are. We had a going away party at Nice Winery, and it was such a phenomenal experience. Business park, but a cozy build out. Mm-hmm. So people can come in, sit on some couches, drink some wine. My wife and I were so blown away by the experience there that we were like, why do you guys not have a location at Baybrook or a location on the north side in the Woodlands area? Like, the idea that of a local distillery opening up and you guys being able to somehow transfer some distilled products to maybe a tasting room on the west side or a tasting room on the north side, I think is such a genius idea that it kind of blows me away that I don't know if any Houston breweries are doing it, but I know for sure no Houston distillery is doing it. But a Houston distillery with tasting rooms all over the city to help build that brand is a freaking genius idea. And it I can comfortably and within my realm of knowledge say that it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
And relatively speaking.
Well, yeah, compared to what we're already trying to do, I mean, it should be able to pay for itself. You know, we should have no problem walking into anywhere and getting a line of credit to build that up.
A good example of a distillery that's actually doing that is Wiggle Whiskey out of Pittsburgh. So they have a distillery about a mile away. They have a tasting room. And about 2 miles away across the river in Pittsburgh, they do have a rick house with a whiskey garden, all within about 2 to 3 mile radius in downtown Pittsburgh. So that's, you know, we've gone and talked to them and talked to other people like them. And, oh, that's a great idea. I'm standing on someone else's shoulders doing those kind of ideas.
Mm-hmm. Everything is, I think we talked about this before the show too. Everything's derivative of each other. On the show. Everything's derivative of each other.
Yeah.
The idea that a rising tide raises all ships, mm-hmm. right? So you pull from the things that work. You get rid of the things that don't. You learn from each other. And then all of a sudden you have a beautiful drinking culture.
And I can tell you, I mean, everyone that we've talked to that has come before us of doing this has been just, you know, increasingly helpful and telling us, oh, you know, don't do this. I did that. It was a terrible decision. But, you know, this thing over here, it seems to be working for us. So,
right.
You know, and that's part of the reason it's also taken us so long because we wanted to have that vision and be able to kind of.
So let me ask you, do you guys have a projection of when you'll be done and ready to go?
As an opening?
No. I mean, hit your mark and proceed.
Do you guys, about 45 days.
Hopefully.
So within 45 days, you're going to hit that mark.
Yep.
And then hit the ground running.
Lease should be signed in about 60 days, and then we should be hit the ground running at that point. And it's about a year build out for everything to be ready. Yeah.
Plus whatever permitting hiccups that there always are.
There always are.
And lead times for our equipment. So we have minimum of 8 months lead time.
How big of a still are you guys looking at?
It's at 12,000 or 1,200 gallons.
12 gallons. So 120 gallons, so you can fill two barrels a day. Column still, you said?
Pot column hybrid.
Okay. Just like Boone County and a few others.
We'll give us flexibility in some things.
Pot column hybrid.
Out of Scotland.
So on top of sourcing, do you guys plan to do a gin? I would highly recommend it.
Yes.
Avanac is killing it right now.
We're going to do a vodka and a gin as well.
Ugh.
Well, you got to have the vodka to make the gin.
Well, I mean,
I it might not be your wife that likes to drink vodka, but I know many.
Are you gender stereotyping?
No, I just know that many of my wives.
Oh, dang. Outrage 2019, bro. All right,
it happens. People like it. You got to have something for everybody.
You have a group of 10, 15 people come in.
Someone's going to want
and
vodka.
And one person hates whiskey, and they want to go because there's nothing for them to drink.
That's why the Whiskey Social invites other spirits. One, I like a lot of spirits.
Yep.
I like anything that there's some effort behind it. And so we invite, we've got a couple of rums this year. We've got a couple of, I think we have one gin actually, maybe two gins at the event. We still keep everything whiskey oriented, but, did you go to the event last year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember seeing you. What'd you think?
Yeah, it was good.
It was great.
It was great.
What does that mean?
No, that's
good. Dude, bro.
That was good.
These jeans make my butt look big. Answer my question.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Did the Al Young tasting. Then we did the BTAC tasting. And then.
Oh, yeah. So how were y'all after that?
We were feeling great.
Yeah.
After hitting the 70-year-old rum too.
Yeah. You know? All right. All right. You know, not to put you on the spot on camera.
We went straight over to the, the 70-year-old cognac.
Oh, the ancestral from Maison Ferrand.
Yeah.
70-year-old blend of cognacs is freaking ridiculous.
Was delicious. And, and then.
Shout out to Greg Doxakis.
Don't remember too much after that, but Ubered home.
Sure.
You know, responsible. Everything was delicious.
Yeah.
Real quick, and then we got to go. Now that you're on camera, the only way this episode's going to air is if you promise me your first single barrel pick when it does happen.
Of course.
Okay.
All right. Done. Appreciate it, guys. All right. We've got to go. That was four full segments. It flew by. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers. Cheers.
You're empty. Yeah. Nope. Sorry. Pour something in the glass, then we'll cheers.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.